Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Scientific Coaching Podcast. No, we did not die. it's been a while since we've recorded, but that is in part due to the fact that, well, quite frankly, there ain't been shit to talk about.
Yeah.
we've been sitting here going, what the hell are we going to talk about? Nothing. Okay, put it back. And now stuff happened. Before we get into all that, we have to recognize the fact that we are in the presence, virtually, of a real-life athlete. And I am not talking about his exploits with Fayetteville High School in track. No, I am talking about the bona fide, genuine, authentic softball player, Darren Shrewsbury Jr. Darren, two questions. One, how goes the softball? Two, what position are you playing?
I don't know if they've finalized positions yet. I think they're just kind of feeling everybody out, but I'll probably be cycling between like first base and somewhere in the outfield. Mm. And then, I mean, frankly, it's just fun to be doing something, you know?
Yeah. Wish I could play softball. That'd be fun. I still want someone I want to watch you play. I need to get Liz to just get my number and then just like FaceTime me during the game so I can watch the game. You need to start working her towards that, because I don't have that kind of clout yet. You need to keep working on my behalf to do this. It's called supporting a friend. Speaking of supporting, Robert Kraft did not support Bill Belichick in his efforts to become an NFL head coach again. He this whole thing came out yesterday, April 17th. And essentially what it was Arthur Blank, the owner of the Atlanta Falcons, called Robert Kraft because he was looking to hire Belichick. And Kraft told him that Bill wasn't trustworthy and that he shouldn't hire him. And that supposedly played a large role in determining why Raheem Morris is the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons and not Bill Belichick. So, Darren, I there's only one place we can start, and that's this news. What do we think? I was shocked when I heard it, but what does this mean for us as Patriots fans? I was already anti-Kraft because I think he screwed Bill over. But the fact that apparently this is all goes back to how Kraft allegedly feels betrayed in the last few years of Belichick's tenure in New England, going back to the fact that his favorite son, Tommy, left the team. this seems, I don't know, cataclysmic, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's hard to formulate words for just how, like, infuriating it is. It's one thing to not want him as the head coach of your organization anymore. That is well within your right to decide, I don't want him as my coach anymore. Whether I agree with that or not, it's well, the action of doing so, it's well within his right. But to go on and effectively sabotage his chances at continuing on with a career that he clearly wanted to continue. Otherwise, he wouldn't have even interviewed with for any of them to begin with. Then, you know, that's some next level bullshit. And it really is just infuriating.
Yeah, here's the thing. I really am anti-Kraft now. And I've said this before, and I know that some people, if you've been listening to this show long enough, you know I hate most owners. I think most owners are arrogant people who really need a reality check. But here's why Robert Kraft will get lauded as the owner of the Patriots, that he was a season ticket holder in the old Foxborough Stadium, bought the team, saved the team from being moved. That's all fine and well. But I really think the last few years, fan Robert Kraft has gotten in the way of the logical owner Robert Kraft. And yes, I've said on this show that the owner's job is to be the biggest fan. Don't do stuff like, don't interfere with the football team. That the second part of that is really key. Yes, as well within your right to fire a head coach, but you just fired the greatest head coach this sport has ever known. I'm sorry, but there is no way you, after, especially after this, there's no way you get my respect back. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry, but I'm done. And I'm tired of having an owner who thinks, and here's the thing. I'm pretty sure I know what it is. It's that he thought the team was going downhill and he won a Super Bowl before he croaks. And I get that. I do. But at some point, you got to go, I won six. When I was here, when I bought this team, there was a real chance they were going to move. It's called perspective, my man. Mm-hmm. Look at it. Realize you're not going to get anyone better than Belichick, even if the team isn't all that good. Guess what? Transitions take a while. Even in the NFL, everything happens in an instant. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but Bill Belichick should still be the head coach of this team, and Robert Kraft, honestly, Robert Kraft has done things that are conduct detrimental to the New England Patriots. And if he was anyone but an owner, I'd say fire. But you can't fire the owner. Well, you can, but there's no way the owners are going to do it. Because the Patriots make money to the league hand over fist. They're never going to tell them to leave. Never. Especially because ratings go up when the Patriots probably go up when the Patriots suck, because everyone's like, hey, the Patriots suck. We can actually watch the NFL again. It's just wrong. It's just wrong. Like, really, it's wrong. Apparently Bill would be interested in the Cowboys, Giants, or the Eagles. I have a suggestion. If the Jets fire Robert Saleh, go to the Jets and beat the Patriots twice in the same season and see what Robert Kraft would say about that. That'll be the only time I will be okay with losing to the Jets. The only time I'll be okay with losing to the Jets. Because I'd be like, you know what, Kraft, you deserve that. You deserve that for being the asshole that you have now proven yourself to be. Belichick seems to have landed on his feet to some degree. He's been touring. He went to go see his son's Washington Huskies defense, and he went to hang out with Northwestern Lacrosse. He made his way down to Indianapolis, though, virtually, hung out with Pat McAfee, and they're going to get to know each other a little bit over the next few days, because Belichick is going to be the draft analyst, actually co-host, of Pat McAfee's NFL Draft Spectacular. So, Darren, I will ask you this. Is this a match made in heaven or what?
Oh, this is going to be fun. I mean, like, there's just some joy in even the slightest things when you get to see Belichick not in head coach mode. Like, the on-air announcement from Pat of Belichick joining in this role was hilarious. And he goes, hey, I like your hardware back there. And the first thing Belichick says is, oh, yeah, that's my bling.
Like, you never would have got that out of him in the middle of November against when we were getting ready for the Steelers.
Exactly.
You never would have got that out of him.
It's I think it's going to be fun. And but it's what's really going to be great is that, like, we always see the videos of Belichick analyzing game, analyzing film, or the interviews of him talking about, you know, various pieces of NFL and just pro football history. But now we're going to get the opportunity to not only probably hear some tidbits of that, but hear him analyze draft prospects in real time.
Yeah. It's going to basically feel like what the Patriots war room would have been.
Yeah. And that'll just, that's just some special insight. Like, you get those tidbits every year from each team's war room, right? But you don't get this. You won't get this. And I think it's going to be extremely fun to have that, and then also have Saban on the other side on a different broadcast, effectively, giving in his 2 cents. And I'm tempted to have both of them figure out a way to have both of them up at the same time, which, in fact, I know exactly how I'll be able to do that. So,
I don't know how I'll manage that yet, but I'm going to find a way. I guarantee you I'll find a way, because I'm with you. Like, I always watch College Game Day because I like, well, here's the thing. I'm one of those fans that loves game day and gets a withdrawal from that when it's not football season. And so the NFL draft version of College Game Day is like my little bit of hope in the middle of a barren football-less time. Mm-hmm. And it gets me through to August. That's what it is. So I need game day, because I'll go insane if I don't. But I also want Belichick, because I'm not going to get him anymore after this. It's like, damn it, I need this. And yeah, I need both. And I mean, here's the thing. I can't wait to have Saban on game day, but this is going to be special. Now, did you see part of his interview with the Masters, Nick Saban's?
I did not.
I think I sent this to you, actually. The oatmeal, his Little Debbie cakes.
I don't remember.
Well, the thing is, his breakfast is a Little Debbie cake and a cup of coffee. That's his breakfast, and it has been as long as he can remember. And he said that the game day people put him through with the woman who's responsible for getting him back. She said they're already sucked up for football season 4. And he said, all right, this woman's got her priorities in order. And I'm like, that is my West Virginia native son showing himself on the national stage. This is going to be great.
Yep.
Well, let's move on to the serious stuff in the NFL draft. Let's talk about what we want from the Patriots. But before we get into any of that, I have to ask you the following question. Will Caleb Williams go number one so we can finally stop talking about that?
Probably.
Will the Bears suck afterwards?
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean,
shit, they got rid of one of their only options of doing anything.
Yeah.
Only to effectively downgrade.
They downgraded and they started the process over again. Like, congratulations, you just made the last 3 seasons completely meaningless.
Yeah. It's like, and you didn't put any damn things around the kid. And now you're bringing in a new guy who has equally a few weapons. And I damn sure I don't believe you're going to pick him up or pick anything else up for him.
Historically, the answer is no. At least recently. So yeah, it could be not fun for the Bears. But let's go back to our team. I think the biggest. I mean, this is the first non-Belichick draft since 1999. This is quite literally a once in a generation thing. Like, we've got a whole generation of Patriots fans who don't know anything other than Belichick drafting or the dog.
Yeah.
That in itself is mind-blowing, but we've traditionally gone with the don't draft a receiver in the first round. But I feel like we both want to take a receiver in the first round. Which begs the question, do you, at this point, trust the new GM without ever having seen him make a football decision outside of free agency, which was largely unremarkable, to draft well?
I think anything's up for grabs at that point, honestly. I mean, I think off-season-wise, I like the move simply because it was trying to keep as many of the key pieces that needed to be kept from getting on free agency and to at least keep some sort of coherence with this team. So I like that. And I saw something earlier today, I believe, that it was probably just, it's basically just vague talk to a reporter or something, because obviously they're not going to play their hand now or show their hand now. But basically, he was asked, like, I mean, what would you do with the number one pick? If would you be willing to trade it effectively? He's like, it's not off the table. And he was also like, and if there, it's basically to a question of would you draft a quarterback? He's like, if there's a quarterback we like and we think he's worth like picking that high, sure. And so basically as vague of answers as you can give, because you're not gonna give that away. But I'm just like, it wouldn't surprise me if they traded back. But at the same time, I'm like, as long as you could draft literally anyone, you could draft a kicker and I would still be happy because it's not a quarterback.
Yeah.
No one's going to do that, but I would still much rather you pick a kicker at number three than pick a quarterback.
Truthfully, oh, Bill took a kicker in like the second round last year, and look how that worked out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
I just hope I don't want a quarterback. I've said this before. I truly believe the answer at quarterback is already sitting in the quarterback room.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the answer is Bailey Zappe, and I will not budge from that.
And if they don't believe it's Zappe, then they brought in Brissett, and I'm like, roll with him. Dude can play. We know he can play. We know he can win.
And to everyone going, well, you need to with a new head coach, you need to go get your franchise quarterback and lock him up. It's like, we tried that.
Yeah.
It didn't work. I'm okay with just getting someone behind center who can win the damn game.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's – I mean, yes, everyone wants their guy for the next 15 years. That's known.
Absolutely.
But if you give me a 2 or 3 year guy and this team makes the playoffs, maybe even wins a playoff game, who knows? Maybe you can go on a hotter and be on a heater and you win the Super Bowl. I'm fine with that. I don't care if it's some kid out of college that they've had 15 years with. I don't.
If there's one thing I've learned about all this is that the term franchise quarterback means fucking nothing to me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need a franchise. I find more enjoyment in seeing guys like James White and
Tom Brady.
Yes, Tom Brady, but I'm talking about the guys who aren't quarterbacks. I'm talking about the guys who aren't quarterbacks and then next thing you know, they're gone, but they've made such an impact. Danny Woodhead, all the damn running backs that have come.
Danny Amendola.
Exactly.
Not drafted, but still.
Yeah. The guys who come in, make an impact for a couple years, and as much as I don't want to see them go, they go, and then the next guy fills in and just makes his own name, right? Like, those guys, you get those blips, and what I think happens with the Patriots, or has happened with the Patriots in those situations, is that you end up seeing the best of those players in those 3, 4, or 5, you know, well, pushing most of the time 3 or 4 years, and when they go on to their other team, yeah, they're still, you know, doing all right, but they're nowhere near as effective or utilized to the extent that they would be able to be as effective. And that's unfortunate, and I hate that for them. I genuinely do. But I'm also like, hey, we got your best years, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
And if that happens with a quarterback, it doesn't matter to me. If we get your 3, 4, 5 best years and you go on somewhere else, like, I'm not buying your jersey. I am a strictly retired player jersey buyer. Like, I'm not going to buy a rookie jersey. I'm not going to buy – it's just simple as that. So it's not a matter of that to me. It's just a matter of this team is trying to win games, and if you win games for the time you're here, then hell yeah. And as far as I'm concerned, if it comes to a quarterback, I would much rather them grab a quarterback later on in the draft, sit him behind Brissett and or Zappe, get familiar with the system, and when they decide they don't need Brissett and Zappe anymore, one or the other, and then they go, hey, it's your time, go, that's fine with me.
I agree with you. This organization of all organizations should be the one that understands the most. You don't have to go and get a quarterback early in the draft. Mm-hmm. This organization benefited from some kid who was ready to give up the game in 2000 for 20 years. You know how this ends.
Yeah. The guys who don't, who you don't think are going to stay or going to just be left to the wayside, who think they're going to be left to the wayside. Edelman didn't think he was going to stay longer than a couple of years because he was backup special teams for a year or two. Then he was Ratona, and he was like, oh, okay, cool, whatever. And the next thing you know, he's a 3-time champ and a Super Bowl MVP because he put in the work. And I think you get more, much more out of those guys.
Look at the guy he replaced, Wes Welker. Mm-hmm. Wes Welker had been bounced around the league for years. Comes to New England, has 112 catches a year.
Yeah.
I don't know. I am looking forward to the draft for us being over by like 9:30.
Yeah.
That'd be great. That's great. Hey, we actually can discuss this instead of, oh, I stayed up way past when I should have been going to bed. You already are in bed, and I have to tell you who they drafted the next day.
Yeah.
We can have that conversation in real time this year.
Yep.
God forbid they trade back. God forbid they trade back. All right. Well, let's jump sports here because, there's not really much else to go on in the NFL. Let's change sports to basketball. The NBA has banned someone for life, which that doesn't happen very often. In fact, it's only the second time that anyone's ever been banned in the NBA for life. The other one was Donald Sterling after the mess he created for himself in like 2014, right after Adam Silver became commissioner of the NBA. It was Silver who handed down this to Jontay Porter, who formerly was on the Toronto Raptors. He was suspended a while ago as the league investigated gambling irregularities, and he is banned for life after said investigation found that he disclosed confidential information to sports bettors and even wagered on games, going as far as occasionally betting on the Raptors to lose. Mm-hmm. So, here's my question for you, Darren. Is a lifetime ban too little, too much, or just right?
I'll go even as far as to clarify with the betting on his team or against his team that there were wagers or betting lines, and I think there was one highlighted specifically in which he knew he was injured and not performing to his best, and there was quite literally a betting line as to how much he would underperform in the game, one of the games in question, such that the person he fed the information to bet $80,000 and came out a millionaire. So we're not just talking this guy going, oh, I'm injured, I'm going to be betting on games like some of the NFL players. We had, what was it, Calvin Ridley was the one that,
yes,
that got a season ban for that, or season
for suspension. Gambling on games, yeah, that were not involving, exactly, the Atlanta Falcons.
So this guy's sitting here actively being an inside man for people to make money, and also attempting to make money for himself. Now, the extreme hilariousness in all of this is that this man, in all of this trouble, came out with a whopping $20,000 profit.
And his salary was what, $2.8
million? He made something like, yeah, close to $3 million, yeah, in his time in the league. One, this man ain't smart. Two, absolutely 100% without a doubt warranted. Because there has to be a line. We were talking about this earlier in that we straight up said that the legalization of sports betting is going to, the widespread legalization is going to cause far more issues and we're going to start seeing them. Well, here's one of the pinnacles of that, those issues. A guy actively betting on him against, or feeding information to someone, knowing full well that he is quite literally influencing that, the outcome of the bet for his own team, on his own well-being. That is, if that isn't a lifetime ban, then what the hell is? You know, like,
yeah.
And you do it all to end up coming out with $20,000. Not only is that a ridiculously horrible return on investment, you are literally a millionaire. Not only does it show absolute lack of judgment and critical thinking and anything, it shows a horrible lack of integrity. When it's very blatant that you're not supposed to do that. And it's not even a matter of if I agree if you're not supposed to or not. You're not supposed to. I am fully of the belief that sports betting should have never been made legal. Simple as that. So you've got that. You've got people reaching out to college players, even meaningless ones, even guys who you're like, why the hell would the third string quarterback from Vanderbilt need to be pestered by an illegal sports bettor about rigging a game? But it happened. Like, we're at that level now. And if the people involved that are actively acting on these things get caught, there should be serious punishments by the respective organizations. Even if it's legal sports betting, it is not ethical within your organization. I am perfectly fine with them being banned, and I would not be surprised if in the next couple years we start seeing a slew of them, and then everyone stops because they understand that, yeah, shit, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. But sadly, it'll take a couple of years for them to actually get it through their thick damn skulls.
You know what's going to have to happen, right? Goodell's going to have to kick someone out of the league. The NBA is for all intents and purposes irrelevant in terms of like, oh, okay, like people bet on the NBA, but like, we all know football betting is big. If they had kicked Calvin Ridley out of the NFL, this would have a totally different tone to it. Mm-hmm. But as it is, he's playing for the – did he sign for the Titans?
I don't remember.
I think he signed with the Titans. I think that's where he went. So, yeah. I mean, he's going to suit up in 2020 in the fall.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, so what? But if Goodell – if this happens again, and God forbid someone bets on their own team or against their own team, who knows? You're right, though. And the most obvious comparison here is Pete Rose, right? The great baseball player who got banned from baseball because of betting. People will say, oh, well, he bet for the Reds. He bet for his own team. And he actually later on revealed he bet against the Reds every now and again. So that option is not a great defense.
Yeah.
So the people who are saying that, oh, if he would have bet on his own team, let's just think about this for a second. I was thinking about this morning, actually. If you are a professional athlete and you have to bet on your own team to give you reason to win the game, isn't that a problem?
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to have that reason to get out of bed in the morning. The reason you get out of bed in the morning should be winning the game and the very good compensation you get for doing that. Mm-hmm. No outside compensation required.
Exactly. If you want other, I mean, you're already making more money than 99% of the people watching you play. And you have the audacity to sit there and throw it all away for $20,000. I'd slap the motherfucker in the face if I saw him for that. I'd be like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You absolute fucking moron.
We're just roasting this man.
Yeah, he deserves every bit of it. and more.
Oh boy, think about this shit.
He's not only impacting himself, he is quite literally impacting, well, bettors who lose money on that, but his teammates. That's the more important thing. Screw the bettors. You're impacting your teammates. You know you're not at the capability to perform, and you are feeding the information to someone so that they may bet on your ability to perform. And who knows what else that came out of that. But your teammates suffer from this, or stand to suffer from this. Like, what the hell?
It's just wild. I mean, it's just like, I did not think he would get a lifetime ban. I thought he'd get a season ban myself, a lot like what Ridley did. But based on what the information provided by the league office was, like, you all had no choice.
Mm-hmm.
And good on you for doing this.
Yeah. It's like Ridley, even with Ridley's suspension, a season felt right to me. Initially, I was like, okay, I'm questioning it. But the more I thought about it, I was like, you weren't supposed to do it, my guy. But at least you weren't sitting there affecting the outcome of a game for these bets. So a season was fine, given the context. This, if it was anything less, I would have been like, what are we telling these players? Effectively, you're telling them it's okay if you don't want to play for a season or two. It's okay, though. You can come back later.
Can we also just roast the bettors for a second? Because, like, if you're betting on a fucking Jonte Porter points over-under, what does that say about you? More importantly, what does it say about you that you're willing to go to the levels in which you are, as in colluding with the guy, to make your money? Like, just, not that such a thing exists, but just make an honest bet.
Yeah.
Like, really, like, we're forgetting to roast the people who are responsible for this. If no one's betting on this, it's a non-issue.
Yeah. My first real answer, or real response is, get help. Non-jokingly, get help. Truthfully. Because you're down bad if that's the case.
Yeah. I mean, the guy was he had a two-way contract. He was going between the G League and the NBA. If you're really looking at an NBA bet and you're going, yeah, I want to bet on some dude in the G League coming up here and dropping 40. Come on, dude. He's not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he might drop 20 on a good night. G League players don't drop 40 in a game.
Yep.
I don't know what the over-under was, but let's just use that as an example. But still, it's like, really, dude? Really? That's of all the bets that were available, you know, that's the one you took.
Yep.
I don't know anymore, man. I don't know. That's almost as weird as there's gonna be a hockey team in Utah next year.
Yeah.
Speaking of, and this is an unofficial add-on to our show. It's not in the rundown, but it's funny. They're gonna play as the Utah hockey team for like 2 years. And I'm like, did you not see how many people hated that in the NFL?
Yeah, did you learn nothing?
Like, I know Gary Bettman probably doesn't like Roger Goodell, but it's like, why? If you all were so, if they were so, the league forced the sale of the Arizona Coyotes. They forced the sale. They were behind this. It's like, if you knew this was your plan, why didn't you go to the team in Utah and be like, come up with a name? Is that the last thing? Did someone lose the checklist and no one bothered to check that last part off? And here's what's weird about it. It's almost like a Cleveland Browns situation. The Arizona Coyotes, the history of the Coyotes is placed in a trust almost. It's being left in Arizona. The only thing that Utah is getting is the team, its minor league, its hockey operations, and that's it. It's an expansion team. It's an expansion team that just happens to have what the players who were the Arizona Coyotes as of last year.
Yeah. And congrats, the entire team was traded to Utah.
Essentially, yes.
Have fun. Guys, have fun. Better get... it's not Utah. That is... Oh, yeah.
Utah is
the... Well, I was going to say Utah's a Mormon, right? Utah's
yes.
Mormon state? Yeah, yes. What I was going to say is have fun or get familiar with Mormonism.
It's actually a name someone says the Salt Lake Storming Mormons. I need that. It's his team's name.
See, when you say that, do you want to know the first thing that popped to mind?
Yes.
South Park, Starving Marvin. That's my papa.
Okay, honestly though, the Stormin' Mormons sounds like what the minor league team rebrands for like one night only and then goes back to whatever they're called the next night. Like I could not. Could you imagine this? Tonight from PPG Paints Arena in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the National Hockey League presents the Pittsburgh Penguins against the Salt Lake Stormin' Mormons.
That sounds like what people may have tried naming the Indoor Football League team back in 2016.
Yeah. You're right. You're right.
That along with football team McFootball team face.
Yeah. What? You know what we need? Going back to Belichick, we need the team to coach team called Snapface. We need that. We need it now. Don't ask questions. Just go with it. I hear the UFL might be looking for an expansion team. But here's the thing that weird about the Coyotes is that the NHL has pretty much that they're leaving the entire history of the Coyotes in Arizona. I don't know how they plan on doing that, but they are. And
You get a dilapidated stadium and, well, not saying that the stadium's currently dilapidated, but it will end up dilapidated.
They played in the college rink. It pretty much was.
Well, shit.
No, literally, they left their 18,000-seat venue to play in a 3,500-seat college rink. And they still couldn't sell a place out.
They were forced to sell.
Yeah, because they couldn't ever come to an agreement to stay in Arizona. Owner wouldn't put forward, couldn't get a deal done, and the city was like, well, maybe not. And yet they're still okay with him being an owner in the future.
With how damn hot it gets in Arizona, they'd want to be in a hockey rink.
Well, Arizona State is a pretty good hockey program. They've proven they can make it work. What I don't get is that, the NHL is still okay with this guy being an owner. I'm like, I'm sorry, but if the words forced to sell team are anywhere near this guy, I'm going to say he's not worthy of being an owner in this league anymore. Yeah. If you go back to Phoenix, do not let him anywhere near that organization.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bold move, I know, but it just might be beneficial. just maybe. The NHL still wants a team in Arizona. I'm like, I don't know why you think that's going to work, but okay. You got like Quebec City. The Quebec Nordiques would be a great organization to have back in the league, but can't do that. They want to go back to Atlanta. I would have a problem with that myself, but here's the thing. The Calgary, I didn't know this till a while back. The Calgary Flames began life as the Atlanta Flames and then moved. The Winnipeg Jets began life as the Atlanta Thrashers and then moved. Atlanta has lost two teams to Western Canada in the course of its life as an NHL town. I'm going to say but hockey don't work in Atlanta.
Apparently not.
It's like hockey don't work in Phoenix. It's cool enough in Utah. Hockey probably actually, I think hockey will do well. Especially if the team ends up it's the Cutters. I forgot. They're not going to be good. I was going to say the Vegas Golden Knights were good and everyone loved them, but the Coyotes' history suggests that team will be ass. Well, I don't think we have anything else to really discuss unless you've got anything that you want to add that we forgot.
No, not that I can think of.
All right, so that brings us to everyone's favorite ending segment, What We Learned This Week. And you ever get those feelings where you just, like, it's hard to explain, but maybe you just want to do, like, one particular thing. This is one thing, like, it keeps nagging at you, like, I really need to do this, right? I really feel like I should do this, and you just get around to it. Well, we have a book here on the Revolutionary War, and we've had it since I was, like, in third or fourth grade. I mean, it's been a while. It's an older book. Not, like, revolutionary old, but old. And so, but it's in remarkably good shape. And so, I was like, you know what? I don't even remember why, but I was like, I should read that book. And so I read that. I picked it up today, and I read the first two chapters of the book. And it was talking about the lead up to the Revolutionary War and the early parts of the Battle of Lexington and Concord and then Bunker Hill. And it occurred to me that some of the dates, and they were lining up today, April 18th. And when you hear this, it'll be April 19th. So April 18th, 1775, was Paul Revere's midnight ride. Today is the 249th anniversary of Paul Revere's ride. And tomorrow is 249 years since the Revolutionary War began with the Battle of Lexington and Concord. Or as Henry Wadsworth, or as it was later called, the shot heard around the world. Which to this day, no one knows who fired that first shot. But did you know that it was not just Paul Revere who made the ride? There were three riders that night.
I vaguely remember, but I don't have any idea of names, if there were names.
Samuel Prescott and William Dawes. All three were captured, and all three escaped. Revere was interrogated by the British at gunpoint and then left. But here's where people kind of get... This is where history kind of goes to the actual facts. They didn't go through this, and the British are coming. The British are coming for two reasons. One, that would have been very bad in terms of kind of keeping it on the down low. Like, oh, I'm just going to go yell in the streets. No, that didn't happen. They instead were riding to inform select people that the British were coming. And they did not say the British were coming because they considered themselves British. It would have been like the regulars or the redcoats or something other than that. It wouldn't have been... You know, the British are like, oh, well, we're all British. Who's coming?
It's like, wait, my cousin's just down the street. He told me he'd be back in 10 minutes.
Yeah, like, so I know that.
He's coming.
Yeah. That's literally, that's, yeah. So there's a little bit of fun fact for you. I was reading that and I was like, wait, April 18th. Today is April 18th. Oh, shit. And I was like, that kind of added up that I've been wanting to read that book for a while. And then I was like, I finally picked up on the day, the night the Revolutionary War began, effectively.
It did. It's quite the coinky dink.
Hey, there we go. That's the word. But it's still cool. I hope to... The book is not that long, with maybe like 200 pages or so. So it's like a Park Service book, kind of. It's not real thick, but it's just, and it's not like in detail a ton, but it's enough to where you understand what happened. It's kind of fun.
So mine is another fun thing I came across today. So one of the overarching, effectively the overarching goals, or at least what the science media wants you tries to say, of vaccine development is what are called universal vaccines. We always hear things like, oh, the universal flu vaccine, someone's working on that, such that we never need to worry about what strain of flu virus is predominant this season, because they always have to take data and effectively predict the most likely 4 strains in each season's flu vaccine. And if I recall correctly, it's always they keep 2 and cycle 2. There's some mosaic. It's like a mosaic nature to it year to year, where part of the some of the strains are kept and some of them are cycled in for new ones. I just can't remember the ratio, but they're quadrivalent vaccines, so there's 4 strains. But there's always been roadblocks into how to do that, because it's always most vaccines target specific parts of the virus or the organism in question that they're providing protection against, such that HIV, for example, that's always been a problem, is that it changes it mutates so frequently that it's nearly impossible to develop a vaccine against one part of the virus, because it's that genome's going to change, 3 or 4 viral generations down the line. That's just an exacerbation of how quickly it would be, but very damn quickly. So the development of a vaccine couldn't keep up if we had to keep doing what we do with the flu for HIV. Well, some researchers from from UC Riverside have published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science, it's called PNAS for short, an RNA-based vaccine, a strategy, as they call it, that they have tested in mice that hopes to be effective or utilized as a universal vaccine. I'm going to call it a chassis, backbone, I guess is a more appropriate way to go. How they're doing this is that they're not targeting a specific section of the genome. What they're doing is using a different type of RNA to generate the protection. So where the COVID-19 vaccine uses mRNA molecules to have your body take up, cells in your body take up and generate, effectively generate proteins from COVID, from the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and your body generates immunity to it such that it can fight off actual COVID-19 or actual SARS-CoV-2. This one utilizes what is called RNA interference. So what RNA interference does, RNAi for short, is it actually inhibits, there are certain specialized RNA molecules, similar to mRNA, that actually inhibit the gene expression or the translation. So it stops mRNA molecules from doing their job. What's useful about this is that it doesn't require a specific part of the genome to be targeted, because mRNA can be created from across the genome. As long as something's replicating and making more copies of itself, like a virus would in a cell, mRNA is getting created and utilized in some way, because it has to create the proteins that end up making the shell, the viral shell, things like that. So it makes it a whole lot less susceptible to that mutation problem that, say, HIV causes with vaccine development. So it makes the possibility of a one-and-done vaccine, or rather a one-formulation vaccine for a virus or bacteria, much more possible. So that way, all right, I've got a flu vaccine. This is my formulation. and I don't need to spend the resources to research the next what's going to be the next formulation next year. We'll probably still need yearly vaccines, I don't know the timeline of the. I believe they said for the mice they showed immunity or for 90 days, but mouse days and mouse immunity time is scaled differently for humans, so it would translate to something else. I don't know what research was done on that. I think and how that all translates, but apparently, according to this news article from UC Riverside, some studies suggest that 9 mouse days is a human year, I guess immunologically speaking. I obviously have no damn clue. I'm not a mouse researcher.
How strange that 9 mouse days is a human year.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a very... That seems skewed now, doesn't it?
So the other important part about this in RNAi vaccines is that they don't need you can give them, you would hypothetically be able to give them to babies younger than 6 months old and the immune compromised. Because they let me look for the part again. I remember seeing it. It has something to do with the way, obviously babies' immunity develops, right? When we're born, we effectively have no immune system, and you get lingering immunity from your mother, especially if you're breastfed, that immunity is conferred even stronger, if I recall properly. So this platform is the word I was looking for, would ideally enable immune compromised people and young babies, basically newborns, to receive vaccines much earlier than current guidelines. Obviously, this is a study in mice, but it has to start there. It has to start somewhere, and hopefully we see more progress with that, because that'd be pretty dang cool.
I did not know a lot of that. None of it, but I really did not. I didn't even know that we. I assumed we had no immune system because it just kind of seems, but I didn't know how that really got, like, I didn't know that. That we get, like, immunity from our lungs and stuff. That's news to me.
Yeah, it's, I believe it's called passive immunity.
That makes sense.
My brain's losing the exact tone if that's not proper. But it generally only lasts less than a year. But by the time it wanes, your body is able to start producing those antibodies and having the proper immune response to start effectively stockpiling its armory, its biological armory. And gather those immune proteins and such. So the thought is that RNAi will circumvent that, because you don't need, you know, those immune parts.
No. Well, this has been a very interesting episode of our Scientific Coaching Podcast. For the life of me, I can't remember what number we were on. So I'm not going to say this has been a blank episode of the Scientific Ocean Podcast. Like I said, I have no freaking clue. But I do know we talked about this before the show. We might be back next week, but it kind of tends to be more based on Darren's new schedule, that we should do it on Thursdays. And that contradicts right with the NFL draft. So there's really no point in us trying to break down something that we haven't seen happen yet. So we'll kind of play it by ear and see what comes. We do plan on discussing the draft, both from the Patriots' perspective, and you know how we are. We'll talk about the rest of the league as well. We'll see how Belichick and Pat McAfee get along and whether Nick Saban has had his oatmeal cream Debbie cakes before the college game day starts. So until then, we thank you so much for listening to our, I guess, comeback episode. We will see you next week or whenever we see you again. I'm getting into myself. All right. Goodbye, everyone. Darren, take us home.
Adios, everybody.